I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. I'm Dr. Howie Jacobson, and this is the Plant Yourself Podcast. Each week, I bring you a conversation with someone who's making a positive difference in the world. And for my day job, I help leaders and their teams master their mindsets so they can achieve great things. To find out more, check out the Mindset Mastery Memo, my Substack newsletter. You can find it at plantyourself.com/memo. And now, today's show. This is the Plant Yourself Podcast. I'm Howard Jacobson of plantyourself.com. So according to our culture, according to science, and according to the National Weight Loss Registry, it's basically impossible to lose weight. Sure, you might take off a few pounds here and there, but you'll probably gain it back. And for people who are obese, their metabolisms have been ruined. And according to the journal Obesity, people who were on The Biggest Loser and lost a lot of weight regained it, and it's because their bodies are basically broken. So I gotta say, being in contact with two dozen people who have lost significant amounts of weight on a whole food plant-based diet, I kind of feel like a Loch Ness monster hunter who's got like this whole album of photos of Nessie, you know, high def, and no one wants to believe me, and everyone just says they're photoshopped, or even worse, no one's paying attention. So I'm going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep interviewing people who have made these incredible weight loss journeys until somebody else starts paying attention. The world realizes that there is a very straightforward solution to our obesity problem. And today's guest, Heather Goodwin, is another snapshot in that album. So she's fond of saying that she was born at her ideal weight, and that was the last time she ever saw it. In her teens, Heather weighed in the hundreds. In her 20s, she made it to the 200s. In her 30s and 300s. In her 40s, well, you can see where this is going. A few years ago, Heather topped out at 436 pounds on her 5 foot 2 inch frame. And as she put it, she was rounder than she was tall. And Heather could also see what her destiny would be if she did not find a real solution. And she did not want to experience a 500 pound body in her 50s. So she said goodbye to all the diets and all the pills and all the fads she had tried in the past. She had lost over 40 pounds 20 times and had lost 100 pounds 3 times. So she was not unfamiliar with the concept of yo-yo dieting. She was looking for something more sustainable. So when she adopted a strict whole food plant-based diet under the tutelage of Chef AJ, that's when things started to happen. And I don't want to spoil too much, but she's now in Wonderland, O-N-E, Wonderland, that magical place under 200 pounds. And she doesn't call herself an after, she calls herself a during story. It's inspiring, and it's heartbreaking, and ultimately, it's instructional. And if more people knew this story and followed it, they too would have the success that Heather's had. So without further ado, Heather Goodwin, welcome to the Plant Yourself Podcast.
Thank you, Howard. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Well, I'm really eager to learn from you about your journey. It's been a long and sometimes hard and brave one, and you're inspiring a lot of people. So why don't you start by just telling us like where you've been, like the before part of the journey.
Sure. Well, you know, I was one of those people. I was born at my ideal weight of 7 pounds, and that's the last time I ever saw it. And so I was a cute, chubby baby and an adorable, you know, chubby toddler. And then, well, you get to elementary school and it's no longer cute. I was just I got a new label, which is the fattest girl in school, and I was bullied on pretty constantly, and I was lucky enough to live somewhere that it snowed a lot, so I got snowballs thrown at me, I got called all kinds of things, and so life was pretty lonely growing up. I would go home after school and eat bologna and cheese sandwiches and watch the Brady Bunch and Gilligan's Island until my parents got home. Uh-huh. And just eat pretty constantly just for comfort and for out of boredom. And that, you know, I didn't have a lot of friends. And then you get to high school and it's worse because of course you like boys, but they don't necessarily like you back. And so it was pretty lonely growing up. And then I got bigger and bigger. So I like to say, like, I was in the hundreds in my teens. I was in the 200s in my 20s. And in my 30s, I weighed over 300 pounds. And then in my 40s, I actually got to my highest weight, which was 436 pounds. And luckily, I stopped there, right? Because I don't want to be 500 in my 50s. But, you know, all joking aside, with that weight, of course, came a lot of health problems. I took 3 different medications to control my blood pressure. I had a cholesterol that was over 400. I was pre-diabetic, and I had a lot of problems like with migraines, and really the overwhelming problem that I had was just chronic pain in my knees and my feet and my back. And I had a smile on my face, and, you know, everybody would think that I was just a happy, I was a happy fat person, right? Jolly or whatever. But honestly, I was in horrible pain. I couldn't stand for more than 5 minutes at a time. I don't think I slept really well for 10 years between having sleep apnea and also just the pain. Laying in one place for any period of time was really painful. So I'd have to roll around. I always said like a chicken on a rotisserie, you know, and, so that was my life, and I was really worried that that was going to be the end of my story, you know, because when you get that big, I'm only 5'2". So if you can picture this pain in a picture for your listeners, I'm 5'2", so that's 62 inches tall. I was 90 inches around my hips and belly, so I was bigger around than I am tall. And I was in near constant pain. I couldn't walk from the bathroom to, you know, from my office to the bathroom would get me out of breath, red-faced. I had asthma. I mean, I was a mess. Basically, to sum it up, that I was a mess. And so,
gotcha. So before we go on, I want to kind of explore some of these issues because I don't, you know, it's a very foreign set of experiences to me. So what did your parents think? Like, were they, you know, very, very overweight? Like, were they, you know, concerned, worried, you know, medically, socially, like what above and beyond the weight itself, like what was going on?
Sure. So when I was growing up, my parents worked a lot. I'm not, blaming them at all, but I was alone a lot. And so, you know, and there was, my mom was from the South and was just a really great cook. And the kinds of foods that were in the house were definitely like your standard American diet plus junk food plus convenience food of busy working parents. But they were kind of baffled. My mom didn't really have a weight problem. And my dad was my stepdad. He married my mom before I was 2 years old, but he was the physical director of the YMCA. So he was a runner and was very physically active, 6'2", 175 pounds, you know, big muscles, model figure. So he was just completely baffled. My sister also, you know, battles with her weight, although, you know, not to the extent that I did. And so they wanted to help me, but they didn't really know how. They put me on a diet. I think my first diet was when I was 11 years old. And I think it was, you know, this is not just baby fat. This is not going away. She's becoming a teenager and she's not growing out of it, you know? And so I remember getting Richard Simmons Never Say Diet and going on a diet with my grandma, and that was the first of every kind of diet. And they tried to help me, but they made a mistake that a lot of parents do, which is that you single out the child. So instead of, you know, hey, we all need to get healthy as a family, we all need to try some new recipes, it was, well, if you just wouldn't eat so much of that junk food, you know, it's we're all going to have ice cream after dinner and you're going to have a banana. So that didn't work very well. And honestly, you know, I was so sensitive about my weight that if you brought it up, I would run crying to the cookies because it was just so painful of a subject for me. And people tried to help me. People loved me and accepted me how I was. And that was a huge gift. But it was really lonely. And then, you know, food has always been a comfort for me. So I found myself a single mom when my kids were really little. I had a 2-year-old and a 2-month-old. And I moved back with my parents, and then I moved out on my own. And so food was something that was cheap. It didn't take a lot of effort, and I didn't have a lot of money. I didn't have a lot of time. So it was some way that I could kind of have a special treat just for me. But of course, that only lasts until the 10 minutes after you have your treat, and then you feel terrible, sometimes physically, but a lot of times, you know, just in anguish. Oh no, I blew it again. Here I go. I'm never going to get out of this. I felt really helpless to help myself.
Mm. So, at what age were you first sort of medicalized?
So I would say, you know, really, when I started having kids is when it really got to the attention of medical professionals, because I was 300 pounds when I had my first daughter, and I have 2 kids. And so of course that puts you into a high risk pregnancy. And, but, you know, I like to say I'm a repeat offender as far as this is the third time I have taken off more than 100 pounds. So I've taken off over 100 pounds 3 times. This is my 3rd time. And I've taken off between 40 and 60 pounds probably 20 times, Howard. I mean, it just, given up. Yeah.
You're 46. How the hell did you fit all those in?
Yeah, thank you. So what happens is that I would try things. I have a lot of determination and I have a lot of willpower, but the things that I was trying, when you have so much weight to lose, it's like running a marathon. You know, when someone says, I lost 20 pounds and it, you know, in 6 weeks or something like that, well, I might lose 20 pounds in the 6 weeks, but I still have hundreds of pounds to go. And so what would happen is I'd be doing great and I would just simply lose steam because it was really hard to maintain that level of commitment over such a long period of time. And I'm really not unique in that. Statistically, it's, you know, the more weight you take off, the harder it is to keep it off over the long term. And so that's what would happen is I would do really well, but then it would come back and it would bring friends, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what I'm thinking is like, if I try something 3 times and I start having success and then it stops, like I'm not back to where I was. I'm worse because now I've got this little voice in my head that's been strengthened that say, this is never going to change. You know, you could try
absolutely.
All you want. And I'm like you've like, this is like 23 times you've gone through this cycle of hope and disappointment. Why would you ever want to try again?
Oh my gosh. You totally get it. You totally get me. Yes. And that is what I want to tell people. You know, we judge fat people so much. It seems like the only acceptable bastion of humor. You know, you would never make fun of somebody anymore for their race or their sexual orientation or, you know, intellectual disability or something like that. But people feel like it's okay to make fun of fat people when really, you know, when I see a fat person, I see a person in a tremendous amount of pain, both physical and, you know, mental, spiritual, because it's an anguished life. It's not an easy life. And then exactly what you said, every time you try and you try so hard and you make progress and you maybe get, you know, social approval and feedback for taking it off. And then when the weight comes back, it's so disheartening. And the worst tragedy of it is you start to doubt yourself. You know, I started to not believe myself and not believe in myself. And just, I actually had a period of time when I thought, you know what, I just guess I'm going to be a fat person and I should learn to be one of these fat and happy, accept yourself people. And I actually think that that was a good thing for me because I did decide to love myself now. And maybe that's the thing that helped me be successful. So the things, just to kind of cut to the end of the story. So I have taken off 238 pounds. I am still a during. I'm not an after. I still have a long way to go. I would like to lose a total of 300 pounds. So I've done about a little more than two thirds of where I want to be. But how I've done that is by focusing more on the behaviors that I need to do to make it happen on a daily basis. And not focusing on the outcome so much. And what I mean by that is sometimes we get so obsessed by, you know, I want to be a certain weight and I want to be it by this time frame or, you know, for this wedding or for this reunion or something like that. But the truth is these are the behaviors I need to keep doing for the rest of my life so that this weight stays gone because, I've determined in my soul that this is going to be the time that I am going to be, you know, I want to be the 1%. I was told by a doctor who was encouraging me to have a gastric bypass. And he said, you know, the chances of you taking off that much weight and keeping it off for even 2 years are less than 1%, you know, and was just really discouraging. And that just made me mad, you know, it just made me think, all right, so thank you for the challenge. Challenge accepted. This is going to be, I'm going to be the gal that does it. And I just find that strength in myself.
Take me on a little tour of some of the things you had tried in the past where you'd lose 40 to 60 pounds and then, you know, because say you've got willpower and determination and you're having success and yet you fall off. Like what were some of those
exactly.
things and yeah. why?
So a small tour of the 1,000 things I've tried. I remember Richard Simmons deal a meal. I did, I was in a weight loss club called TOPS, which is Take Off Pounds Sensibly. I did Weight Watchers more than once. I tried Weight Watchers several times. I became pretty much an expert in nutrition just because I always felt, Howard, you know, I know what to do. I'm an intelligent person. Why can't I get myself to do what I know to do, you know? And so
what did you know to do in those days?
Well, you know, I read Diet for a New America by John Robbins, and I knew that I wanted to follow a plant-based path, a compassionate path, a path that was better for the environment, better for myself. And just, I wanted to live longer and have the good health that plant-based eaters enjoy. So that was something that I determined early on. And then I also, you know, and so I read Dean Ornish's Eat More, Weigh Less. And so I learned about caloric density, and that made a lot of sense to me. All the plant-based doctors, I'm a big fan of all of those pioneers that are going against the big pharma and big agriculture and all the processed food manufacturers, and they're truth bringers. They're helping us. They're saving our lives. And so I'm a big fan of all those doctors and all their work. And so I knew what I wanted to do. It was just, I was stuck in that cycle of addiction. I think that it is no different than being addicted to drugs or alcohol. It's the same problem with a different manifestation, in my opinion. And so I believe that I have a brain that's especially sensitive to sugar and simple carbohydrates, so things like flour. And so now I avoid those things. I eat very simply, and I avoid sugar, oil, flour, and as best I can, salt. Salt is actually the harder one for me. And I eat a strictly plant-based diet, so no meat, dairy, eggs, none of that. And those were the things I was addicted to, was fast food and a lot of sugar, just an enormous amount of sugar.
And so help me understand. So you tried a whole bunch of things that were not plant-based, right? The Weight Watchers,
right.
The Tops, Richard Simmons. And when you started discovering the plant-based doctors, did things change? Like what was the, or were you still struggling even with John Robbins and Dean Ornish and those folks?
No. And I would do really well for a long time. And then I would just, it's the typical fall off the wagon. But for me, it wasn't just fall off the wagon. It's like have the wagon roll over you, because I would fall back hard. Around that time is when my parents started to get sick. And so I would go through, you know, a period of really stressful times when I thought that they were going to pass away, or that just went through a lot of really tough stuff. And that would make me go back to comfort food, food I grew up with. And I would feel terrible about it, to be honest with you, because I am such an animal lover. And like I said, I do know the impact on the environment. I do know what it was doing to my own health. I'm not a stupid person. I remember being at the doctor, waiting for her to come out. You know, I had just been to the doctor. So I had the little after visit summary that they give you, and I had it in my hand. And I pick up the magazine that's in the waiting room. I'm waiting for her to come out. I think she was giving me a prescription for something that you had to have a handwritten prescription for, you know, maybe like a controlled thing. Mm-hmm. And so I'm waiting for her to come out, and I have my after visit summary in my hand, and I'm flipping through some terrible, you know, how they have terrible magazines at the at the doctor's office, something you would never read. And this was, I think, Longevity Journal, so, you know, a real page turner. And I saw this chart that said it was like average life expectancy by BMI. So I look at my paper and I see my BMI, and it was 61, which is crazy high. And I look at the paper and it says, I look in the magazine and it says average life expectancy 45. Howard, I was like 42 at that time. Hmm. I was thinking, oh my gosh.
And you had young kids.
I did. I had kids, and I just feel like your life is not your own. Your life also belongs to the people who love you. And we all have to die. but I don't want it to be my fault. Uh-huh. And I don't want it to be, I don't want people to be at my funeral and saying, you know, isn't it a shame that she left us so early and that she couldn't get a handle on her food addiction. You know, she basically, you know, I don't want, I could see that. I could see people saying,
yeah,
she ate herself to death.
Yeah. You know, I attended a funeral like that a year ago. And what struck me is that nobody mentioned the weight at all. It was in a church, and there was a lot of talk about sort of God's ways being unknown. And it was kind of shocking that no one was acknowledging the fact that this was essentially a suicide.
Yes. And I am a person of very, you know, great faith. I have a very strong spiritual practice, and I'm a Christian, and I believe that God designed us to eat a certain way. And when you don't follow the manufacturer's instructions, you do not get the optimal results. I definitely know that we were not designed to live on all these pseudo food-like products, you know, that come from the microwave from the freezer to the microwave. And we've outsourced our nutrition. We no longer have hardly any part of our own care and keeping. And it's the very stuff that makes us. It's our own, you know, the makeup of all of our cells, and it's us. And we've abdicated that to companies that care about profits and don't care about health. And because of that, we're suffering, and there are so many people like me, Howard, that just are waiting to die. And they eat because it's the only thing that makes them feel good, and they're stuck in that trap. They're stuck in that trap of eating to feel good and then feeling awful and even more awful and even bigger and even heavier and more pain, and then eating to feel better and so on and so on. And it's a trap.
So what
want people to know that they can get out. They can get out.
Okay. So what turned it around for you? When was the first time that you felt like this is really working? Something's different here. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
It was more, I knew that it worked if I could stay on it. Okay. I knew that because in 2010, I had actually gone on an all-raw diet, and I took off 140 pounds. And then that's when my parents got really sick. I ended up losing my parents within 6 months of each other, 2013 and 2014. So I was doing really well. I had taken off the 140, but I was slowly putting it back on, you know.
Were you still on an all-raw diet?
No, I had slipped. I was trying, you know, when I, it's hard to say, I would start out in the morning with my green smoothie and with my big salad and everything. And it's just like, by the end of the day, I might find myself in a drive-through. It was a fight. It was constantly a fight against a very powerful addiction. You know, it almost killed me.
And it sounds like that there was a real sort of black and white, like it wasn't like you were eating this diet and you're saying, well, moderation and a little of this, like you couldn't lie to yourself when you were at the window of the drive-through that you were somehow adhering, right? So what was that dialogue like in your head? Because there must have been a part of you saying, Heather, don't do it.
Exactly. Oh, my gosh. You know, I have a name for that part of me that tells me, it's okay, just this once. Go ahead and do it, because you already screwed up for the day. So you know you're going to get back on track tomorrow. So you got to get in all your treats now, you know. And I call that part of me my brat. And I have to stay in that's a lot of what I tell myself, is I have to stay in the driver's seat and not let the brat is not in charge. She cannot be in charge. She got a big fat F. She did not do a good job of taking care and keeping of Heather. So that's a lot of what I think about in a day. And so the things that, that's what I would be thinking. And I would think, I will get back on it tomorrow. And it doesn't matter. It's just lies you tell yourself. It's just lies you tell yourself. And it's the addiction talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very powerful thing. And until you get it out of your system, I swear, to me, it's no different than like cigarettes. Or I've never been a heroin addict. I've never been an alcoholic, but I imagine it's kind of the same thing. Until you get that out of your system, for me, it takes about 3 days of being off of sugar and flour to get out of my system till I feel strong, And the longer I go, the longer I'm on my path, if I don't mess up, then I almost get to this point that I call bulletproof, where you could wave a chocolate chip cookie under my nose and I would be okay. But there's certain things that you have to do to make yourself bulletproof. And I really feel like that's getting your greens. David Avocado Wolf says, get your greens by any means. And I really think that's true. I do green juices and green smoothies and green salads and just lots and lots and lots of veggies. And that's one of the very big secrets to my plan to being able to stay on it, is I stay full, but I also make sure that I get those greens, because I believe I've heard that there's some research that it actually cuts the cravings for sugar. And it seems to be working for me.
Right. Okay. So let's go back to, it was 2014. You were going back. You'd given up your all raw diet, and you'd lost both of your parents. And at some point,
I hadn't lost them yet. I was working on it. So what happened was, I was trying again. You know, I had moved in with my mom. I was taking care of my mom in the last months of her life, and I was trying. I was slowly gaining it back, but I was fighting it. And she would see me. She would see me making my salads and making my smoothies and trying. It's not like I ever gave up. It's just, I have just been various levels of success, you know? And so my mom said, she pulled me aside and said, this is going to make me cry a little bit, so hang on. she said, when I go, I do not want you to fall apart. I want you to take care of this. Promise me. And so I made that promise to my mom. And that has made a huge difference. I promised my mama. That's why this time is different. It's absolutely different because I made that promise. But also, I don't want this to be the defining thing about my life. I don't always want to be the girl that walks in that, you know, I'm the fattest woman in the room every single time, and that's my identity. I don't feel like I was born to just live my life in pain. And, you know, I missed out on so much. And I want that life. I feel like I deserve that. I deserve to have that chance to live a life and do things that people take for granted. You know, I walk now. I walk between 2 and 4 miles a day, sometimes more, sometimes less. And it's such a joy because I can walk and because, you know, I take my little fluffy white dog out, and she's my little, I call her my furry personal trainer, because she makes sure I don't miss a walk. And I do it at twice a day. And it's just, things people take for granted are amazing to me. The first night I slept all night, and I woke up in the morning and I hadn't, you know, had a horrible, exhausting night. That was a little miracle for me. And my life is just full of those little miracles now. And I realized that this is a gift that I can only give myself. Nobody was coming to save me. You know, it wasn't going to be another guru or a diet or it had to be me. I didn't have a doctor that was going to give me a surgery that was going to get me out of this. It just had to be myself. And it's something I have to wake up every single day and give myself that gift again.
So what did work? What turned the corner for you?
Sure. So I found Okay, so I started a YouTube channel in March of 2015, and it was part of that, you know, I've got to make this work. So I thought, I'm going to do this in front of everybody. I was 360 pounds at that time. I had taken off some weight, but I had miles to go, you know, and I thought, I'm going to do this on the internet and it'll make me be accountable and I won't let myself fall backward anymore, you know? And so I did that. And I was still trying raw food at the time. I was still working on that. And one of the viewers of my YouTube channel actually wrote me and said, have you heard of Chef AJ? And I had not heard of Chef AJ, but she sent me a video that Chef AJ had put on, was called Easy Meals to Make You Thin. And so I proceeded to watch every single Chef AJ thing I could find on the internet, and there was a ton. She did a lot of recipes. She did a lot of interviews, and it resonated with me. Okay, I get it. I'm a simple carbohydrate addict. It's not only that I need to be vegan, I need to be an unprocessed vegan, which is what I eat, a plant-based diet, but I also, like I said, don't eat sugar, salt, or oil or flour. And that is what clicked for me. That made all the difference because that gave me the ability to not have my brain be overstimulated by this hyper palatable food. Even vegan food can be junk food, you know?
Right.
And so instead of just focusing on being plant-based, I was focusing on eating a really, what I would call a simple diet. We eat veggies for breakfast. We eat lots and lots of fruits and veggies during the day. And I eat a lot of like sweet potatoes and quinoa and regular potatoes, brown rice, but nothing that comes out of a can, a package, or a, you know, container.
Right.
It's stuff I make in my own kitchen. Yeah.
How old are your children now?
I have awesome kids. I have a 21-year-old who is away at college. He's going to be a CPA. That's my son. And I have a daughter who's 23, who I convinced to move back home. She's a grad student, so she's my housemate. And they are awesome. They totally support me. They have been my rock, and they know that we don't bring that kind of food that mom can't stay out of. We don't bring it in the house. Because that's another thing that I really want to tell people as a tip if they're struggling, is there's a lot of evidence that controlling your environment is the very best thing that you can do. If you don't want to slip, stay off the ice, right? So don't have anything in your house that doesn't belong in your mouth, that isn't safe to have there. If you can't stay out of it, it needs to not be in your house. Mm-hmm. And I really feel strongly about that. I actually even have, you know, changed locations of my job to get away from from just being tempted, you know, because it's really hard. It's being a food addict is a lot like being an alcoholic that lives in a bar, you know, because there's temptation on every corner. It's everywhere. You see advertisements for, you see drive-throughs. It's so easy. The stores are loaded with just landmines for my life, you know?
Uh-huh. And have you found that it still feels like helplessness, like the temptations are just as strong, or has something shifted where you feel like there's some, you have some internal, more internal controls that maybe obviate the need for, you know, micromanaging the external?
Sure. So, you know, I think it's just smart to control your environment. I believe the evidence, I believe all the studies that show that the people who control their environment really well do the best over time. And so I just think that that's smart, and I'm following the research. But yes, what happens when you do go on an unprocessed diet, when you do especially abstain from sugar and from flour, because it's metabolized a lot like sugar, and same thing with alcohol. Luckily, I never liked alcohol, but when you stay away from those things and other addictive animal products, like cheese is notoriously addictive, those kinds of things, when you can get those out of your system, something happens where your brain starts to heal. And so I believe that someday they're going to find out that people like me have a medical condition, maybe that our brains are a little bit more sensitive to overstimulation by hyperpalatable foods than your average person. Because, you know, I know people, my son is one, every year he likes those, you know, chocolate. He likes a little chocolate. So I give him a little chocolate at Christmas, you know, vegan dark chocolate. He likes it a lot, and he'll eat a piece or two, and then I'll go in his room, and I think I just found some a couple weeks ago. You know, so it's like there are people that are not affected like I am affected, you know, and it's kind of a miracle to me. It's like it's something he really likes, but it's still around all this time later, and he can put it down and not think about it again. And my brain doesn't work like that, right? So. But what does happen is that I always say I can stay off sugar as long as I stay off sugar, because once it gets in your system, it's just like you're back where you started. They say when you're being on the wagon and you're abstaining from things that you're addicted to, your addiction is over in the corner doing push-ups. Okay. So the addiction continues to progress even while the person is having success with their behavior. And so that's what I focus on, is things that I can control. And so things that I do are I prepare my food ahead of time. I make sure that I have lots of the food that I can eat, and I have zero of the food that I'm not supposed to eat. I stay away from places that are too tempting for me. So, you know, I don't go to restaurants very much. And actually that makes me save a lot of money. So it's a good thing. But if I feel especially vulnerable, and I might not even go to a party or something like that. It just depends. I've gotten so
that
I can handle those things now.
Yeah. What does that feel like when you say I'm feeling especially vulnerable? Does it feel like sort of a physical, like a craving, or does it feel like an emotional?
Yeah. It can be either one. You know, I do look out for emotional triggers. So one of the things that I try to do is stay on an even keel and not let myself get super hungry, or if I'm very upset. You know, they say the acronym that they tell you to watch out for is HALT. So it's hungry, angry, I forget else, lonely, tired, or stressed out. And all of those things can be triggers that you make you want to comfort yourself with food. I also find that a lot of women struggle with hormonal cravings that are very strong and very challenging. And that seems to be something that, you know, when I have messed up, I've almost always, if I do the postmortem, I realize that, I was having a lot of hormonal cravings at that time.
Do you still mess up?
I do. You know, I am absolutely not perfect. I like to tell people that too, because, you know, I know that there are people that are like, I didn't know about a plant-based diet, and then I found out about a plant-based diet, and then I took off 200 pounds and I never put it back on, and I am perfect, and I never have, you know, that is not my story. That is not my story. My story is, you know, walk 50 steps down the road, stumble, fall, get back up, walk 20 more steps, stumble, fall, get back up. But every time, that is the difference. I get back up. I get back on the track. And the other thing that is that you have to get rid of that. There's even a psychologists even have a term for it called the what the hell effect.
Uh-huh.
And the what the hell effect is like, I blew it, and I didn't intend to eat that cupcake, but I ate that cupcake. Therefore, I am no longer on my diet. Therefore, it is open season on any food that I think that I might want, and they just eat their face off for the rest of the day because, you know, we're going to get back on our plan tomorrow, you know.
So what
July,
do you,
everybody tells themselves.
So what do, when you mess up now with everything you've been through and all,
yeah,
you know, so at what point can you stop yourself?
Okay. So I have a new technique that helps me a lot, and it's actually just a couple things: trying to stay calm, not trying to feed it with emotional energy, the fact that I've just gotten off track, and just get back on track the minute you can. So I have little things I say to myself, like, next bite healthy. You know, the very next bite that goes in your mouth needs to be healthy. You need to resume as soon as you possibly can. And you need to do whatever you have to do to get the support that you need to be able to resume, because sometimes you need to call an accountability partner, or you need to go on the internet and watch, you know, listen to Plant Yourself or listen to some of our plant-based leaders. I make myself listen to a lecture by Dr. Clapper called Sugar, Salt, and Oil that just tells you how horrible it is for your body. You know, it kind of it throws cold water on my addiction. It makes me go, I just can't do that to my body, you know?
Uh-huh.
Or I think about animals, and I think about how much I love them, and how much I don't want them to be hurt, and I don't want to pay someone else to hurt them for me. And so there's different things that I can do to kind of throw cold water on the addiction. And the biggest favor you can do for yourself when you fall off, and I do think it's a win, you fall off. I mean, I think that people get, when you're rounder than you are tall, I had a very serious addiction. I had an addiction that almost killed me. And I have to think of it as life or death kind of terms. I am not a moderation girl. I cannot have a little of stuff. Moderation did not work for me, and I know a lot of people that it doesn't work for. And instead, I have to think of it as like safe foods, and foods that don't overexcite my brain and keep me calm and keep me happy on an even keel, and that give me life, you know, and let me experience life without being in pain all the time. So it's a good trade-off. I don't miss the things I choose not to have because I want something so much better, which is, you know, freedom and a life free from pain, and just so many things that I missed out on that I want to do, that mm-hmm. I want to be around for, you know, people I love that I want to be there for.
Yeah.
And that's more important. Yeah.
So I'm really curious about the, you know, the falling off and getting right back on. Could we freeze frame mm-hmm. that a little bit
sure.
for my benefit? So when you find yourself eating something that's off the plan, does it feel like you sort of just like woke up, like the brat took control and put you to sleep,
mm-hmm.
or were, you know,
it's
like,
almost all an impulsive situation. So anymore, because I do keep my home safe, you know, I keep my house as a clean environment. If I have something that's off my plan, it's almost always that I was confronted with something that I wasn't expecting. So I walk into the break room and they're having a potluck and it smells insanely great, or somebody brought in a birthday cake, or, you know, something like that, something that I wasn't expecting. And it just catches me at a moment. Sometimes it's almost like the brat wants to gobble it down before the adult can wake up.
Uh-huh.
It's like, Hey, let's hurry and get this before she stops us, you know? And run like you stole something. And, that plays into my childhood. You know, I did a lot of sneaking of food. I remember them being like those butterscotch candies that have the wrapper. And my mom, I was eating a whole bunch of them, and I'm probably 5 years old at this time, right? My mom puts them on top of the fridge because she sees them just like going to town and eating all these things. And I remember like waiting until my parents went to bed and sneaking into the kitchen and climbing up the drawers to the counter to get on top of the fridge. So this is really a long-standing pattern, which kind of makes me laugh now. But, you know, there's a lot of sneaking and a lot of shame. There's a lot of, like, hiding the wrappers and hoping no one sees you go through the drive-thru, and your family thinks you're all being on track, and they don't realize that you're struggling because you're too ashamed to reach out for help and things like that. And I know that there's people that are listening to this that are going to be able to relate to what I'm talking about. And I think that that's one thing it shares in common with other kinds of addictions. And so what I say to people is, when you do have those moments, when you're weak, and we all have them, try to shorten the period of time between when you fall off and when you get back. Simply resume. Try not to feed it a lot of emotional energy of, like, guilt and shame. And it's, you know, that's not going to help you. They say energy grows where energy flows. So feed what you want to prosper. Feed the part of you that wants to be healthy. Feed the part of you that loves you. Don't, you know, if being mean to yourself and calling yourself names and wallowing in shame and hating yourself would make you skinny, I would be super skinny.
So I'm glad you said that, because one of the things that I struggle with in trying to help people is, you know, it's not just about weight. Like, when you talk about obesity, there are sort of sexual politics. There's the whole fat shaming thing. And I find myself in a place where I understand that, you know, there's a lot of people who have struggled with weight for a long time, who come to the place of, I just love myself the way I am, you know, fat and beautiful. And at the same time, I hear from every, you know, obese person or formerly obese person that they're actually miserable. And, you know, it occurs to me, like, if you say you love yourself, like, you would take care of yourself. Like, help me kind of understand the tightrope there of, you know, sure, not beating yourself up, but also making expectations of yourself.
Sure. You know, I have to say that I do believe that there are some people who are happy with their size and they feel like their size works for them and they're happy. And I'm happy for them. I wish, honestly, I could have been that person, because that wasn't my experience. There was not a time when I didn't feel bad in my body, and mainly physically. Again, you know, I just was in a massive amount of pain. It's a really good thing that I hate narcotics, because I could see how people could get addicted to pain medicine. It's just physically very painful to be so heavy. And then to not feel good, to not meet what society says is a beautiful woman, you know, to not feel like you're attractive to men and everything. So when I hear of people that have that say that they have that acceptance, I think you just must be such a strong, strong person. It doesn't mean that they don't, I hear what you say about, you know, if you love yourself, you would take care of yourself. You know, there's another side of it, that they're comforting, that food is comfort, and that was kind of my way of making myself feel better. And I didn't know any other way to make myself feel better. So I think that that's some of it. You know, when that's worked since we were babies, you know, baby cries, mother nurses the baby feels better. So you start that pattern so young, and some of us, that becomes our main way of coping with life. Other people might drink or smoke or take drugs or spend too much or have, you know, relationships that give them drama. But that was my drug of choice, right? That was how I comforted myself. Right. And so one of the skills you have to develop to love yourself is how to make yourself feel better without relying on food that is going to kill you, you know? Yeah. I almost compare it to breaking up with a bad boyfriend. When I stopped having sad food, I'm like, it's not me, it is you. I need to break up with you, even though you've been my secret lover all these years. I need to break up with you because I love me more. Uh-huh. I love me enough to make that investment in my future, right? So I'm doing something that's painful now or hard now because I want the outcome later on. And I love myself enough to invest in myself. So that's what I was saying. When I was 436 pounds, I had a hard time walking from my desk to the bathroom. I forced myself to walk around the block. It hurt a lot. I complained. I had huffing and puffing. You would think that I had just run a marathon. My kids laugh because I just would complain almost the whole time because I would be like, ow, ow, this hurts. I hate this. This is horrible. But I did it, you know, I did it. I did it kicking and screaming, but I did it. And same thing, I ate kale when I wanted chocolate, and I steamed veggies when other people were having, you know, fast food crap. And it's like, that's something that I did for myself then that I'm so grateful for now. And so I ask people, because it can be so encouraging when you have so much to take off. I think people don't understand what it is. It's like a mental marathon that we're running, because it is a mental game of day after day. I love myself enough to do what is required, even though it's hard, even though I miss my coping mechanism, even though I'm totally tempted and I'm having physical withdrawal. I love myself enough to do what is required. And so I always ask people, what will you do today that you will thank yourself for tomorrow? Because people say, are you embarrassed of your before picture, of your great big pictures? And I am proud of that girl, because it was hard and she did it and she tried again and she never gave up. And I'm so thankful to the person that I was that she didn't give up, that I didn't give up, because, you know, I'm not there yet, but I'm so much farther down the road. And so if people can just take the long view and love yourself enough to do whatever is required to make yourself feel better, and you're worth it. You know, you need to put yourself on the list so many times, especially moms. We take care of everybody else, and we don't, you know, we're so busy that we don't leave enough time to make healthy food, or we don't leave enough time to go out for a walk, which is stress relieving and, you know, gives you exercise and makes you feel better and gives you a chance to like meditate and think about what you're grateful for. There's just so many things that we really need. We need it. It's not like, it's not being selfish. It's taking care of yourself and putting on your own oxygen mask so that you can put on someone else's. And it's also, you know, we are giving an example of our kids of how to parent, if you think about that. So do you want your kids to be so busy that they don't take care of themselves? Do you want your kids to think that it's okay to always put yourself last and to comfort yourself with something cheap from a package, instead of taking the time to build life and health and do the things that you need to do to take care of yourself? So our kids are always watching. And if you can't do it for yourself, think about who loves you. Think about who would miss you if you were gone. Sometimes we're so discouraged and so beaten down, and we've lived in these bodies that hurt for so long and we're depressed, that it is hard to love yourself. So if you can't do it for you, if you can't try again for you, who do you love that you will do it for? Mm. You know, I'm doing it for my kids. I'm doing it to keep that promise to my mom. And now, you know, I'm doing it for me, because I wasn't born to live my life in pain. I wasn't born to feel bad about myself and to not have any fun. You know, when I was so large, I couldn't go on an airplane. I couldn't fit in a movie theater. It was hard even getting in and out of cars. Seatbelts didn't fit me. I got tickets because I couldn't wear my seatbelt. I didn't want to be unsafe. I didn't want to not wear my seatbelt. It was just, you know, you just feel stuck. You feel like you're a prisoner in a body. And honestly, you built the prison with the fork and the knife, and you built the prison yourself, and you're the only one who can unbuild it. You're the only one who can let you out.
Yeah. I'm curious what lessons your kids have learned from you so far, because obviously they were watching for many years when you were, you know, yo-yo dieting and being unsuccessful and feeling discouraged and out of control. And now for the last, you know, two years almost, you've been on this different path. What do you think they've learned from this whole journey?
Well, I hope, first of all, I'm super excited because both my kids are plant-based eaters, and I feel so good about that now because, you know, I had a lot of guilt for the way that I fed them when they were little. You know, I fed them a standard American diet when they were little, and my daughter actually became a vegetarian when she was 5 years old. She just decided on her own that she loved animals and she didn't want to eat them anymore, but she was the vegetarian, not vegan. But, you know, and I thought, oh, this will last 2 weeks, you know, she's 5 years old. No, she's kept with it, and she's 23 years old, and she still hasn't eaten meat in all that time. She now, because I'm on a plant-based diet and we live in the same home and I do most of the cooking, or pretty much all the cooking, she's actually eating all plant-based. So, and she's working out and she's living a really healthy lifestyle too. So I feel really great about that. My son saw a video on YouTube of Dr. Neil Bernard, and he went from vegetarian to vegan just basically overnight on his own without my influence or anything. And so now we're all plant-based eaters, and we're all, so I love that they got that from me. I'm glad that happened. But the other thing is, I feel like they know, they definitely know that mom has an addiction that's very serious, that's similar to what other people have with other kinds of substances, right? So it's just my substance, a simple carbohydrate. Somebody else's might be alcohol. Somebody else's might be drugs, credit cards, you know. I know that they understand that. And I hope that they see, I really hope that they see that if I fall down 1,000 times, I'm going to get up 1,001 times, that you absolutely cannot give up. You cannot give up. And I almost feel like you don't have a right to give up. If you have people that love you and you have challenges that only you can overcome, you owe it to the people that you love to be there for them, to physically be there for them. And I wasn't able to always do everything with my kids when they were little because, you know, I physically couldn't move around very well. And so, that is something that I hope that they've learned, that I will never, never, never give up.
Right. That's beautiful. Before we go, can I ask you about your current state of health?
Sure. So I just recently, just like a couple weeks ago, I got under 200 pounds for the first time since I was in my teens. And so that feels pretty great. And so we call that Wonderland. When you weigh 100 and something, you're now in Wonderland.
Uh-huh.
And so I recently became a proud citizen of Wonderland, and I'm just working on keeping that going. The other thing that happened is that I'm very much walking. So I walk you know, the least I walk is about, I really walk about 4 miles a day, and I do it in two sessions. You know, I walk my dog in the morning and at night and things like that. And just things are good. I don't have, I'm no longer pre-diabetic. I don't take any medication for anything. And I had took three medicines just for hypertension. My acne went away. My eczema went away. My asthma went away. I don't have sleep apnea anymore. I'm trying to think of all the great things that have changed. But, oh, my cholesterol is under 200. And my doctor says, as I continue to take off weight, that'll continue to go down. So I always, you know, that line from that song, I'm not all that I can be, but I'm better than I used to be, and I'm getting better all the time. And so my goal is to get down to 136 pounds, which would be an even 300 pounds off. And at my height, that is just happens to be the highest BMI you can have and still be normal, like not overweight. So 136 pounds at 5'2" puts you at the very, very top of normal. Uh-huh. So that's where my goal is at this point. And I still have, you know, 60 something pounds to get there.
And how about the pain?
I'm going to get there. Oh, yes. Oh my gosh. I have no pain. It's amazing. I can't even tell you, that's like such a gift. People who have never been in pain all the time just don't realize what it's like to just be able to take that for granted, that you can walk and you can step and it doesn't hurt. And I can sleep through the night and it doesn't hurt. And I don't wake up with a migraine. And it's just, that's amazing right there. That's worth all of it. Even if I didn't lose, you know, even if it hadn't resulted in weight loss, if eating healthfully could help me be free from pain, it would still be worth it. It's worth all of the chocolate brownies and ice cream and racks of ribs and everything that I gave up. But right. It's more than a great trade-off for that.
Right. Now, I came across you because people were chattering in my Facebook feed about your journey, your transformation, and the closed group that you started, right? The butterfly effect. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah.
And you know,
sure.
how you're paying it forward?
Absolutely. So I have a YouTube channel called The Butterfly Effect, Plant-Based Extreme Weight Loss. And so I made the Facebook group as kind of a adjunct to that, so that I could interact more with people that were leaving comments for me on YouTube. And so that's how that came about. And it has been really awesome to just be able to get to know people, you know, off of YouTube. And now there are lots of people that have 50 or 100 or more pounds to take off that are in that group. And we're all doing it together, you know, and that feels really great. We can all help each other. We can all keep each other on track. And I have people in there that have already, you know, done what I'm trying to do, that I've already taken off a lot of weight and kept it off, and that eat like me. And, you know, I also am a member of Chef AJ's group, the Ultimate Weight Loss group, and people that eat like I do with the simple, what I call is like a simple unprocessed plant-based diet, where we don't eat the sugar, salt, or oil, and we eat lots of veggies. And lots of starch. I always laugh and I delight a little bit, and a little nasty side of me kind of delights in saying, yeah, I took off all this weight by eating carbs, lots and lots and lots of carbs. That's all I eat, you know, because carbs have been so vilified, but you know, it's sugar and flour that are bad for you. It's not potatoes and carrots and celery and broccoli. Yeah.
Right. And in looking over the posts that people put on the page, that it's there, you know, folks are really encouraging each other and, you know, asking questions,
absolutely,
answering their own questions. It's almost like, you know, you might be the inspiration and the conductor, but it's become an organic self-help group or other help group.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're all, you know, and that is the thing, is that we're all sisters and brothers in this journey. It's not like I'm the leader or whatever. If anything, it's those people have been such a huge support to me. Since I started my channel, I was really scared to start a channel, you know, to be a YouTuber, because you always hear about trolls and about people being horrible to people on the internet. And I have been so delighted by how much support and love and caring that I have felt. I have yet to have my first troll. I hope to not have that experience, but I feel like it's so worth it. Just people are lovely. People are wonderful and they're very supportive. And when I do have ups and downs, you know, I'm very human. I'm not perfect and I still struggle sometimes. But my commitment is that I will never, never, never give up. So you might see me stumble, you might see me struggle, but you won't see me quit. And people have just been like such an integral part of that. When I feel so down, I read my comments or I go to my Facebook group and people are just amazing. And then you get strength for the journey. You know, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It's a lifelong commitment to loving yourself enough to do what hurts now to make sure that you have that freedom later, that freedom from the addiction and the freedom from pain and the freedom from debility. You know, I want to be an old person that has a very different experience from what I saw my parents go through, which is they worked so hard all their life, they saved their money, and then they got sick, and then they lost all their money, and they ended up losing their freedom. They ended up being, you know, my dad had to be in like a care facility, and his whole life was in a small room and then in a hospital bed, and that was his whole existence. And it just broke my heart. And that is not what I want for myself or for my kids or for other people. I want us all to be like chasing after the grandkids, gallivanting all over the world, seeing things, doing things, making a difference, helping each other, serving humanity. You know, that's where I see myself. And I know that the investment I'm making now is what's going to make that possible in the future.
That's beautiful. You know,
thank you.
And it's so helpful, you know, for me as a coach, as a professional who helps people get healthy, to hear your story, to learn from you. You know, one of the gifts I've been given in my work is that at a certain point I developed this superpower that I'm so grateful for. It almost brings me to tears. Whenever I'm out and about and I see someone who's really overweight, I see the heroic person inside that they are and could be, and I see their essential nature. Like, I don't see them as, oh, there's a fat person.
Yeah.
I can see like, oh wow, like almost like when you look at someone that you know well and you can see them what they look like at 11 or 12 or like,
yeah.
Like I can see that now. Thanks, but it's, you know, it's not like, for me, it's thanks to people like you and Josh Lajani and Tim Kaufman and Eric O'Gray and, you know, all these folks that I've seen as, you know, as they are on their journey towards health and happiness and joy and authenticity, is that now when I look at their photos, I look at everybody, no matter how sort of sick and overweight, and I see the true, you know, authentic, happy human inside of them. And it's good because, you know, I wasn't always that way. I would look at fat people and judge them.
Yeah. And I so wish that everybody could have the experience of being seen for who they are, you know, and for them to see themselves who they are, because you're not broken, you know, you're not beyond help. You're not hopeless. I thought I was broken. I thought I was a hopeless case. I thought this was going to be the end of me, and this is the end of my story. And the thing is, you just got to try again. You got to do it and fake it until you make it and keep going and just never, never, never give up. And Howard, that's beautiful that you can see people through those eyes. It's really hard for me to not like go up to fat, random fat people and give them a big hug and say, I know how hard it is. And I know how hard you've tried. And I know yep. what you're going through. And I know that you're hurting. They probably wouldn't like that in the line at the store. You know?
Yeah,
probably have to keep myself from doing that.
But you know, people can hear it from you much easier than from me, like at the point at which they're ready to step forward, because yeah. like I can have a conceptual understanding and I can be empathetic, but you've been where they are. And you know, and that's,
you know, but for the grace of God, go I, you know, I mean, I have to, it's a forever thing. It's like, I've been where they are, but I am where they are,
yeah.
you know?
Uh-huh.
I still have to fight the addiction. I still have to make sure that I take care of myself and that I love myself and make a concerted effort to, you know, it says it in the Bible, but be a guardian at the portal of your mind. You know, you got to keep your mind in the game. It's a mental game. It's not, it feels physical. It looks physical, but it's all between your ears. You got to keep your head in the game and be on guard so that you can maintain what you've achieved and keep moving forward. And every time you fall down, you just get back up, dust off the dust and just keep moving, you know?
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I hope we can have you back when you reach 136 so we can,
thank you.
We can put a period at the end of the sentence.
Yeah. Well, I'll definitely give you a call. In the meantime, you can find me on YouTube, right?
All right. I'll post the links to your YouTube group and to the Facebook page and also to Chef AJ. And I'll see if I can find the Michael Clapper DVD, everything we talked about. I'll put it in the show notes,
which will be
plantyourself.com/170 for folks who are listening
awesome.
or don't have the website handy. So Heather Goodwin, thank you. Thank you so much. Yep. Thank you so much for taking the time today.
All right. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Take care. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Plant Yourself Podcast. Be sure to check out the show notes with links to everything we talked about at plantyourself.com/170. If you're new to the show, you can catch up on 169 archived episodes over at plantyourself.com. And while you're there, sign up for the email newsletter. I include links to original articles, and I also share recent Tribe Well TV shows. This week, we had a great show. I had a guest, my dear friend Mark Lushton, came and talked about lots of spiritual issues related to health and wellness. And it was profound for me. And he also came over to our house and gave us a feng shui consultation about our home and garden, which I'll talk about in Garden News in a little while. Thanks, of course, to Plant Yourself Podcast patrons Kim Harrison, Lynn McLellan, Anthony Disson, Brittany Porter, Dominic Morrow, Elizabeth Clifton, Barbara Whitney, Tammy Black, Amy Good, Amanda Hatherley, Mary Jane Wheeler, Ellen Kennelly, Melissa Cobb, Rachel Behrens, Christine Nielsen, Tina Scharf, Tina Ahern, Jen Bilkinofsky, David Bizek, the mysterious Michelle Eck, X, Elspeth Feldman, Victoria Dolomanova, Leah Stoller, and new contributor Alan Christensen for your generous support of the podcast. If you would like to support this show, you can share this and other episodes on social media and via email. You know, just help spread the word. You can write a review on iTunes. That helps so much. And you can also become a patron by pledging a one-time amount or an ongoing gift to the podcast over at plantyourself.com. So in garden news, as I mentioned, we're thinking big coming off this feng shui consultation with Mark Lushton, and we've realized that our dream is much more of a large homestead garden than a commercial farm. So we're starting to envision and plan for and take steps to realize that dream, even while it's unfolding. And it's a wonderful discipline to now put forth the joy and energy that we expect to yield once the whole plan comes to fruition. That's all for this week. So as always, be well, my friends. Let's take this home with some gratitudes. First of all, thanks to Mama Earth. You have been so very, very good to me. Second, Will Ridenour donated the use of his beautiful song Savali Dawn as the theme music for this show. You can find out more about Will's music at willridenour.com. Third, thanks to all the patrons of the Plant Yourself podcast for your financial support. You can read the names of all the patrons at any show notes at plantyourself.com. If you would like to become a patron to show your gratitude for the work I'm doing and help support it, you can do so at plantyourself.com/gift. That's G-I-F-T, all lowercase. And finally, I want to thank you, the listener, for making all of this possible, for giving me a reason to reach out to people, to have conversations, to edit, produce, publicize. All the stuff that I do is for you, so that we can continue to have conversations and continue to ripple out healing and transformation into the world.